party has privacy director and does not accept unidentified calls. To allow this person to see the name and number of the phone you are calling from, please press 1. Or to identify yourself by recording your name, press 2.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is off the hook as I stagger across the finish line here. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
Out there in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
I'm here. Good evening.
Okay, well, you know, we weren't on last week. We had some technical issues. We could talk about that, but we're not going to because we have so much else to talk about, and it's not important. The important thing is we're here this week, and you, our listeners, hopefully are here as well, and we have a lot to talk about. But I'm going to ask, if you could indulge me for a moment. I just want to read an excerpt from something that it means a lot to me. It's something that has inspired me over the decades. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I have my name, the name I use. It's the book 1984 by George Orwell. I'd like to read, if I may, the last two paragraphs of that incredible book, written in 1948, published in 1949, and particularly apropos, I think. The voice from the telescreen was still pouring forth its tale of prisoners and booty and slaughter. But the shouting outside had died down a little. The waiters were turning back to their work. One of them approached with the gin bottle. Winston, sitting in a blissful dream, paid no attention as his glass was filled up. He was not running or cheering any longer. He was back in the ministry of love, with everything forgiven. His soul white as snow. He was in the public dock, confessing everything, implicating everybody. He was walking down the white-tiled corridor with the feeling of walking in sunlight and an armed guard at his back. The long-hoped-for bullet was entering his brain. He gazed up at the enormous face. 40 years it had taken him to learn what kind of smile was hidden beneath the dark mustache. Oh, cruel, needless misunderstanding. Oh, stubborn, self-willed exile from the loving breast. 2 gin-scented tears trickled down the sides of his nose. But it was all right. Everything was all right. The struggle was finished. He had won the victory over himself. He loved Big Brother. I'm not sure if you all remember the story a couple of years ago. Actually, I think it was 2021. This guy named Roman Pratasevich was on a plane a plane that was forced down in Belarus. He was a dissident blogger from Belarus. And the plane was forced down so that he could be dragged off of it and arrested. He begged the people on the plane, "Don't do this. Don't land the plane. They will kill me. I'm a refugee." And that plane, escorted by a Belarusian MiG-29 fighter jet, was forced down. It landed. And Protasevich was promptly arrested. You guys remember that? I remember that story. But you might not know, and this happened just over a year ago, maybe closer to 2 years ago. He reemerged. He reemerged with a different attitude. He said this on camera shortly after being released. "I'm insanely thankful to the country and personally to the president." In a long interview on state television, he apologized to the riot police who defended the country during the mass protests of 2020, which had been the largest in Belarus since the fall of the Soviet Union. He claimed he had been ordered to stir up the protest to create a pretext for international sanctions against Belarus. He denounced his girlfriend, Sofia Sapega, who was arrested alongside him and had been sentenced to 6 years in prison. "Why should I leave?" he said on state television. "It's very good here. There are a lot of young people. Everyone is walking. The birds are singing." The goal of President Lukashenko was simple and clear, said Franek Viakorka, chief of staff to the exiled Belarusian protest leader Svetlana The goal was simple and clear, to break the personality of Roman, make him the instrument, the tool of Lukashenko's policy. And he achieved it. Lukashenko was elected yet again a week ago Sunday with this former dissident standing by his side, helping him win again. Yeah. He loved Big Brother now, too. It was fiction in 1949. It's reality today. And it's not a reality that is limited to places like Belarus, because what we've seen here in this country over the past couple of weeks, only a couple of weeks, particularly over the last few days, we have seen some unbelievably Orwellian developments. More than 8,000 web pages across more than a dozen U.S. government websites have been taken down since Friday afternoon, according to the New York Times, as federal agencies rush to heed President Trump's orders targeting what words are approved and what words are not. More than 3,000 pages from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, including 1,000 research articles filed under Preventing Chronic Disease, STD Treatment Guidelines, information about Alzheimer's warning signs, overdose prevention training, vaccine guidelines for pregnant people. More than 3,000 pages from the Census Bureau, the vast majority of which are articles filed under research and methodology. Other missing pages include data stewardship policies, documentation for several data sets and surveys. More than 1,000 pages from the Office of Justice Programs, including a feature on teenage dating violence and a blog post about grants that have gone toward combating hate crimes. More than 200 pages from Head Start, a program for low-income children, including advice on helping families establish routines and videos about preventing postpartum depression. More than 180 pages from the Department of Justice, including all state-level hate crime data, and 7 pages discussing anti-LGBTQ hate crimes. Close to 150 pages from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, including more than 50 press announcements about the use of the National Disaster Distress Helpline in the aftermath of shootings or natural disasters. More than 100 pages from the Food and Drug Administration, including more than 60 regulatory guidelines on topics such as increasing diversity in clinical trials and the potential for addiction and abuse in drug trials. I could continue for another half hour listing all of this. But what we're seeing is basically revisionism, changing the language, changing history, changing the words we use, changing the values that we hold. And it's only the beginning. Now, I know a lot of people won't be happy that we're talking about this. They would prefer that we talk about exploits and security holes and things like that. But what bigger exploit or security hole could you possibly imagine than what we have seen over the past few days, where an unelected billionaire is basically perusing through Treasury.gov, having access to every check written by the government, including your Social Security information. Unelected. And even if you were elected, it still would constitute an incredible security breach. This is one of the biggest security breaches in all of history. So, yes, we are going to discuss it. And we're going to discuss it in a way that is not kowtowing to those who imagine themselves in charge. Because this is WBAI, where we believe in free speech, we believe in debate, we believe in analysis, and we will continue to cover all that is forbidden in the mainstream. That includes migrant rights, reproductive rights, trans rights, diversity, Black History Month, free speech of all sorts, foreign aid, corporate regulation, climate change, clean energy, mass transit, science, health, vaccines, education, history, immigration, democracy, transparency, dissent. We have a lot to talk about. Welcome, everybody.
Hi there, Alex.
I understand you made the newswire today.
I did, actually. Yeah, and I guess this is a way to tie in tech to the Orwellian nature of the way you had set up this preamble. I'll say a purpose over the weekend. I had an idea pop into my head. I had recognized that within the .gov top-level domain that's used for governments in the United States, primarily just the United States, state and local as well as federal governments, there were some interesting things that were popping up. And I thought to myself, well, look, I do all of this DNS monitoring and coding with respect to zone files and things, and quite literally, this idea just popped into my head on Saturday night about how I could monitor the .gov top-level domain for additional registrations that were located within it, as well as things that were removed from the .gov top-level domain. And so Sunday morning, I got to work, and I coded what had popped into my head. And on Saturday, I wrote the code, wrote a proof of concept, started working. And then I expanded it so I can use this on all top-level domains now. But I wrote it primarily to track and monitor .gov. And so every day I've been watching the new things that are popping up in .gov, mostly state and local websites and .gov domains and things. But then today, two weird domains popped up that seemed particularly – well, at least one of them seemed particularly off-brand for the current administration. And believe it or not, it was DEI.gov that – was registered last night. So I passed that particular domain, as well as another one that was rather interesting, waste.gov, over to Raphael Satter over at Reuters, who then had a source confirm that it was, in fact, the White House that registered these particular domains. And he wrote a story about it. So that ended up in Reuters today, that DEI.gov and waste.gov were registered. And I think it's particularly interesting that both of these terms are found within Trump's January 20th executive order with respect to DEI and stamping out waste in the federal government. So the use for these particular .gov domains remains to be seen. None of them resolve at the moment. If you look up the WHOIS data, it indicates that the registrant organization associated with these domains is actually CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. But it's obviously very clear that given the anti-DEI policies of the Trump administration, DEI.gov will certainly not be used to promote DEI initiatives. Rather, as I speculated in the Reuters article, it's much more likely that DEI.gov is going to be used to rail against DEI policies and possibly to shame companies or agencies that don't fall in line with the administration's philosophy with respect to the eradication of DEI policies. So, yeah, ended up in the news today for a bit of coding that popped into my head Saturday, and I wound up writing on Sunday. So pretty cool to see that idea bear fruit so quickly.
Did you happen to look at the name servers for these newly registered domains? Alex, you're muted somehow. Okay, Alex, while you figure out how to turn your microphone back on, I'll tell people.
There are no name servers associated with the domains. They're just registered. They don't actually have any.
I got to correct you there. That's if you do a WHOIS, you'll see there are two name servers, both of which are cloudflare.com. One is called Ernest. One is called Wally.
Oh, that's new.
Yeah.
That's new.
Yeah.
That's brand new. That must have just happened. Okay.
And so, all of the work that, quote-unquote work that Elon Musk and his minions are up to right now, that can be traced back to Cloudflare as well. So that's something very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, this is interesting. So there's still no IP address, though, associated with the domains. I mean, you can't ping them in any way, so they're not resolvable. But this does indicate to me that the presence of these name server records, it indicates to me that they are in the process of configuring these domains to have some kind of content. I would say probably within the next day or so, we're going to see content on DEI.gov and waste.gov. Now, what's going to happen on waste.gov? Waste.gov, well, I speculated in the Reuters article today that perhaps that's going to be some kind of running kill list for federal programs or things that the Doge employees, and perhaps we should talk about that a little bit as well, Emmanuel, because you had some activity there. But the programs and things that the Doge employees or minions, as you might want to call them, had essentially slashed from the federal budget, perhaps starting with USAID.
Interestingly, Doge.gov is also a domain, also using Cloudflare as name servers. I suspect these are all being run by the same people. We do have a couple of IPs for Doge.gov, D-O-G-E.gov, and there's not much on that webpage at the moment anyway. I'm sure more things will be there. I don't know what kinds of possible security holes they might have. It's just really weird to see these kinds of things happening. But 172.67.131.28 is one of the IPs. The other one is 104.21.3.190. Now, there are a couple of IPv6 IPs as well, but I believe they go to the same place, so they're pretty much the same as those. I would suspect that the IPs for DEI and waste.gov may very well be the same. And we'll find out soon enough. Kyle, go ahead.
Is the Cloudflare name service implying that they're aware that these particular sites will be under scrutiny and more or less attacked or getting a lot of attention, so to speak?
Well, I can't crawl into their heads and think like they do, but it's quite possible.
Does that benefit for name service specifically or the site, even though it doesn't have an IP? Like, there's nothing necessarily to direct the attention to.
Not, yeah. It offers, I imagine what they believe is a level of obscurity, perhaps being protected.
Yeah, I've never really had to set it up myself, but I'm sure not a lot of people are familiar, but from what I understand, that's a service that helps mitigate certain types of denial of service and other kinds of attacks that are pretty common. And it's one of, I think, probably a several in an industry of services that provide that for sites that, you know, may be controversial or be otherwise attacked.
Rob Dealer, haven't heard from you.
I'm just looking at Doge.gov right now. As you said, not much comment so far. There's a blank page that at the top says an official website of the United States government. Then there is the banner Department of Government Efficiency, the people voted for major reform, and a little image of a dollar sign. That image is hosted on imagedelivery.net, which is a Cloudflare domain. And looking at the source, there is a hidden link, a link rel, which is pointing to x.com/doge.
Yes, so, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, to further Kyle's point with respect to Cloudflare, I deal with them constantly, all the time. They are ostensibly used to mitigate against distributed denial of service attacks. They're a content delivery network, but essentially what a lot of threat actors do that are using domain names maliciously, let's say for credentials harvesting or phishing or impersonation, what have it, any kind of malicious type of activity, they'll very often configure the domain to utilize Cloudflare as a content distribution network. And what it does is it obscures who the actual host is. So it becomes very, very difficult to figure out who's actually providing internet connectivity to this particular domain name without having to go through Cloudflare to get it. Now, there are some other tricks and things that you can do in order to get behind Cloudflare and figure out which service is providing connectivity. But for the most part, it really does obscure who the host is and prevents takedown requests from being sent to the host, or and also prevents the host from being subject to additional DDoS attacks.
Okay, well, interesting. Now, we should also point out this is not just about registering new domains. This is about private citizens being empowered to march into offices, kick people out who are legitimately employed there, and basically gain access to some of the most sensitive data imaginable, data about all of us, pretty much. And no oversight, no transparency, just a lot of threatening and intimidation. In fact, some of the threatening went so far as to say, if you identify who is doing this, you will be prosecuted. You will be in a lot of trouble. Which, of course, led to the people behind this being identified. In fact, at 2600, we went right back onto Twitter. This is why you keep the Twitter account, by the way. This is why. So that you can speak directly to them. If you leave, yeah, you can still speak, but you're speaking to the people that agree with you. This is how you reach those people who are committing the crimes, who are up to this skullduggery. And basically what we said was there is nothing illegal about naming inexperienced people currently accessing sensitive government data at the behest of Elon Musk. And they are Akash Baba, Edward Carstein, Luke Farator, Galtier Cole Killian, Gavin Kliger, and Ethan Shoutran. This is a major security breach. Now, we did this with the full realization that action could be taken, but instead of action being taken, word spread even more. And these names have, rightfully so, become commonplace. You know, I don't think any of us are encouraging any kind of threats, certainly not violence or anything like that, just transparency. just what the hell is going on? Who are these people that now have access to all of our data? This has got nothing to do with who you support. Although it's really interesting to see the kinds of responses that we got for daring to post this information. I should point out Blue Sky, Mastodon, kind of disappointingly, universal thumbs up and acceptance. Kind of like to debate a little bit, but everybody there seems to be on the same page. Okay, fine. I guess there's worse things. But on Twitter or X, or whatever you want to call it, there was a widespread approval, but also a good bunch of people that took umbrage at daring to reveal this information. I want to read a couple of the responses without any usernames or identifying information. I think this is a great opportunity to reveal government shouldn't be this big. It shouldn't have that much data. Okay, fair point. Government is too big. Government does have a lot of data. But is this the way to handle it? To send in an anonymous army of basically college kids working at the behest of Elon Musk, giving them full access to government systems and domains and private information, and not telling you what they're up to. Is that the right way to reduce the data? I think that's the right way to spread the data to all kinds of people all around the world. And we're going to find out about that. Here's another. What happened to the hacker community? We used to fight against big government. Now you all seem to cheer for it. Like these assholes are clearly corrupt, but because the orange man is doing it, then it's not good. Talk about not seeing the forest through the trees. Okay. We didn't mention Trump's name once, all right? It's not about him. We're talking about Elon Musk, who is a true threat, all right? Somebody who made a Nazi salute 2 weeks ago. We're not talking about that anymore, are we? Because he's moved on to bigger and better things. We're talking about a security breach unlike any other. A security breach from within. At the behest of people who were duly elected. It doesn't make it right. And we used to fight against big government. Well, what are we fighting against right now? People seem to forget who's in charge. Here's another. I remember back when hackers were all about the free flow of information. Not so much anymore. Not sure when or why that changed. Okay, let me tell you something, genius. We never were in favor of people's private information flowing all over the damn place. And that's apparently what we're looking forward to now. Because Elon Musk has just been given access to all of it. And that's supposed to be okay? We're supposed to just bow down and say, thank you, Mr. Billionaire. You're going to take care of us. We trust you. Were hackers ever that stupid? I don't think so. So don't tell me that this is something new, that we're not holding on to our values of the past. If anything, we've strengthened those values. And we're standing up to something bigger than we've ever stood up to before. Okay, here's another one. You oppose exposing the privileged and corrupt and encourage violence against the investigators, which we did not do. That just means you're just a goon carrying water for those with money, privilege, and power, and cosplaying as if you're a freedom fighter. Okay, the absurdity of this, it's delicious. It really is. We are carrying water for those with money, privilege, and power. Well, you apparently are defending all these billionaires that for some reason you think can't do anything wrong and that have your back and care at all about you. I mean, really? How do you say that with a straight face? I don't know if you said this with a straight face. You typed it. But still, it's nuts. Okay, this on the subject of USAID being shut down and attacked. What's crazy to me is that USAID has long been known as a tool of the CIA, if not an outright front. There's some truth to that. But let me finish the quote first. I learned this from leftist/liberal thinkers at least a decade ago, if not more. We are truly in the upside down. Well, not so much, because we're not kidding ourselves. Yes, there's all kinds of skullduggery going on in all kinds of agencies. But you have to weigh the good against the bad. And what's happening right now is the bad. All right? And what USAID did in the past, sure, there was some collaboration with CIA operatives, but there was also a hell of a lot of good. Just look around. Look at all the funds that were given to people who needed them, to countries that were struggling. And, yeah, it could be done better, but this is not the path to that. This is the path of cutting everything off and letting people suffer and no accountability. Watching 2600 crash out over young hackers following a mission they believe in to cut government waste was not in my bingo card, but I guess here we are. All right, well, I'll put the bingo card down for a second and listen. Young hackers following a mission they believe in? I wish I knew it was that easy. You know, because I used to be a young hacker. I used to believe in mission. I didn't know I could just walk into a government office and take it over and just get all the data. and somehow make it better. Boy, you know, would have been a different world if I had that kind of option. All right, one final comment here. We just don't have the time. The government employees in DOGE, acting at the behest of the elected POTUS, is democracy, even if he's directing them to do something dumb. Bureaucrats being insubordinate to elected officials is the opposite of democracy. Not sure how Dems and their allies are losing that point. Well, you know, there are aspects to government that are not part of somebody who was just elected. There are people who have been in particular organizations for years, decades, and they are legitimate. You can't just say they don't count. They don't have allegiances to one party or another. And that's important. It's important to have people like that running things. Because otherwise, everything becomes a battle. Everything becomes some sort of struggle between one side or another. And you have the Orwellian change of language where all of a sudden this word is bad or this website must disappear. All right? And when you have some kind of a constant, something that continues from one administration to the other, well, that's what keeps things from going completely crazy. And now things are going completely crazy. You wonder why. So, yeah, you know, Trump being elected, yeah, that was democracy. And I think everybody admitted to that. We weren't happy with it, but we admitted to it. What's happening right now, that's a coup. That is a coup from within the winning side. It's basically a power grab, a way of taking more, a way of getting vengeance. You know, I never thought I would feel sympathy for the FBI. Really. I have so much I can say about the FBI and the bad things they have done. I can say the same thing about police. I can say the same thing about so many agencies, so many representatives of government or enforcement. Doesn't mean I want them all gone. Doesn't mean I want them to just be wiped off the face of the earth and let's just see how things go. I think we know how it's going to go. And what we're basically doing now is having toddlers running the asylum. And it's not going to turn out well. Unless we start doing something. Alex.
Yeah, I want to respond to this comment about, well, what's happening, this is democracy, this is just what we voted for, and now we have to deal with it. I want to push back against that as well. I don't think that's true at all. I think that democracy involves legislation. Democracy requires due process. Democracy is about our traditional notions of having an opportunity to be heard before our property rights or entitlements are entirely canceled willy-nilly. Democracy, as I mentioned, is about people coming together to pass laws that promote
the good of this country and the good of the people. And one of those laws, excuse me, that's been on the books for quite some time is something called the Hatch Act. And the Hatch Act, as somebody who worked for the federal government in both in intelligence and defense capacities, Hatch Act was extraordinarily important, and especially within CIA, was something that was very, very much respected. And the Hatch Act is a law that Congress passed that basically says the federal workforce has to be free from partisan political influence or coercion. That's what the Hatch Act says. It ensures that the government programs are administered in some form of nonpartisan fashion. It protects federal employees from political coercion and prevents you from political proselytizing while within the workforce as well. So this whole notion that, well, that's just politics, that's what we voted for, this is democracy, I think is complete nonsense. We have laws to prevent that sort of quote-unquote democracy from infecting the federal government. I think it's really a sad state of affairs when we just are willing to accept the slash-and-burn mentality when it comes to federal programs and agencies and people's livelihoods that have been in place for decades, have done extraordinarily well, and are some of, I think, the more notable achievements in this country's history with respect to human rights and foreign aid and the soft power that the United States has wielded over some time. Now, I think there is a place for politics in the federal workforce as well, and there are many, many people that are political appointees of the president. And some of these I think are crazy, like, you know, political appointees becoming general counsels of intelligence agencies and things like that. But those people are the political operatives that the president picks and chooses, and they have to be confirmed by the Senate. So there's a place for politics, and there's a place where it should not be. And I think we have to remember and I think respect the fact that the federal workforce is supposed to be free from this type of partisan nonsense.
I'd like to go into some of the technical details a little bit more from a newsletter called Letters from an American by Heather Cox Richardson, I believe is the author's name here, who says that shortly after 1 in the morning yesterday, Victoria Elliott, Dhruv Maratra, Leah Fager, and Tim Marchman of Wired reported that according to three of their sources, a 25-year-old engineer named Marco Elez, who previously worked for two Elon Musk companies, SpaceX and X or Twitter, now has direct access to Treasury Department systems responsible for nearly all payments made by the U.S. government. According to the reporters, Elez apparently has the privileges to write code on the programs at the Bureau of Fiscal Service that control more than 20% of the U.S. economy, including government payments of veterans' benefits, Social Security benefits, and veterans' pay. How everybody in this country is not extremely concerned over this is beyond me. The admin privileges he has typically permit a user to log into servers through secure shell access, navigate the entire file system, change user permissions, and delete or modify critical files. That could allow someone to bypass the security measures of and potentially cause irreversible changes to the very systems they have access to. If you would have asked me a week ago if an outsider could have been given access to a government server, one federal IT worker told the Wired reporters, I'd have told you that this kind of thing would never in a million years happen. But now, who the F knows? The reporters note that control of the Bureau of Fiscal Service computers could enable someone to cut off monies to specific agencies or even individuals. Will Doge cut funding to programs approved by Congress that Donald Trump decides he doesn't like? Asks Senator Chuck Schumer. What about cancer research, food banks, school lunches, veterans aid, literacy programs, small business loans? Josh Marshall of Talking Points Memo reported that his sources said that Elez and possibly others got full admin access to the Treasury computers on Friday, the 31st of January. and that he or they have already made extensive changes to the code base for the payment system. They are leaning on existing staff in the agency for help, which those workers have provided reluctantly in hopes of keeping the entire system from crashing. Marshall reports those staffers are freaking out. The system is due to undergo a migration to another system this weekend. How the changes will interact with that long-planned migration is unclear. The changes, Marshall's sources tell him, all seem to relate to creating new paths to block payments and possibly leave less visibility into what has been blocked. Less visibility. Those of you saying that this is democracy, let's swirl that one around a little bit. Now, both Wired and the New York Times reported yesterday that Elon Musk's team intends to cut government workers and to use artificial intelligence or AI to make budget cuts and to find waste and abuse in the federal government. Today, Jason Kobler, Joseph Cox, and Emmanuel Mayberg of 404 Media reported that they had obtained the audio of a meeting held Monday by Thomas Shedd for government technology workers. Shedd is a former Musk employee at Tesla, who is now leading the General Services Administration's Technology Transformation Services, known as TTS, the team that is recoding the government programs. At the meeting, Shedd told government workers that things are going to get intense as his team creates AI coding agents to write software that would, for example, change the way logging into the government systems works. Currently, that software cannot access any information about individuals. As the reporters note, login.gov currently assures users that it does not affect or have any information related to the specific agency you are trying to access. But Shedd said they were working through how to change that login to further identify individuals and detect and prevent fraud. When a government employee pointed out that the Privacy Act of 1974 makes it illegal for agencies to share personal information without consent, Shedd appeared unfazed by the idea that they were trying something illegal. He said the idea would be that folks would give consent to help with the login flow, but again, that's an example of something that we have a vision that needs to be worked on and needs clarified. And if we hit a roadblock, then we hit a roadblock. But we still should push forward and see what we can do. Laws be damned. And that's where we are. Thoughts? Rob?
Yeah. There is no element of democracy in a private citizen, in this case, Apartheid Clyde, marching in, creating an organization that is not a department of the United States government that would require approval by Congress, that's just sort of there, getting a bunch of his friends to also be just sort of there. Nobody's wondering not only what these people's motivations are, but, you know, what are their situations regarding things like clearance and all these sorts of background checks that any of us would have to pass in order to be a high-level government employee. This is terrifying. This is terrifying. This is people who do not have the mandate of a democratic election to wield the power that they are claiming and getting pretty much unopposed at the moment.
I I was thinking of something else, which is, I mean, there are so many pieces of it, but one of them is when you take a theory that has been floated by the current president and decide that that's the thing you're going to run with. I'm sure you guys have heard the thing about condoms in Gaza and how they're going to cut condoms to Gaza because that is like a sign of government waste, government overreach. And apparently they're conflating several programs, including one helping an AIDS foundation in Gaza, Mozambique, because there are other places called Gaza.
Wow. I didn't know that was... I knew they had it wrong. I didn't know they had it that wrong.
Oh, they had it extremely wrong. And someone from USAID was like, we spent 5 cents per condom. Gaza does not need a billion condoms right now. Like, if you take something and assume it's wrong. However, I did read something, a theory that's going around, which is as distasteful as I find it conceptually. If we people, generally speaking, begin referring to Apartheid Clyde as President Musk, that's going to get under the president's skin, and he will cut ties.
Well, you know, people have been trying that for a while now. They've been saying President Trump. I mean, President Musk for a while now. And it doesn't seem to be getting to him yet. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But I think even without that attempt, eventually the attention is all it will take to foster up some hostility between the two. But, you know, we can't really rely on that. We also have to, you know, fight back ourselves as individuals, as people who care about privacy.
Yeah, if people contact their representatives and senators, if Congress disapproves of this kind of activity, my next kind of logical question is, when will these actors, these agents, be arrested or detained or investigated or all the above? And how will the powers of Congress enforce that compared to the sorts of protections they're being given in this sort of unofficial capacity? And I think the logic behind the relationship as it stands now is that technically Trump needs these actors because he himself really does not have the cadres of individuals that are even interested in this kind of stuff. He just has deputized these people as fit to do his bidding in this capacity, whether it is legal or not. And he's giving them some perceived cover, whether he actually has that or not, or has tested that or not. And I think it's really incumbent on us to activate those that represent us, no matter where you sit in this. If you're a veteran, if you're in a red or a blue part of the country, I think the details in this and the scope will profoundly affect whatever life and community you're a part of, because the fall-on effects for those that are losing their jobs or that are going to be victimized by this or not be able to run their organization, they're in your community. They are your neighbors. And if you think that there's, you know, too much of one thing or not enough of another, you're probably going to be surprised by how much more or how much worse any of your particular pet issues is. And that is the real bottom line to all of this, that, yeah, you may see one thing and think this is the answer. But I believe that if you really look into it and understand why we have protections for some of these things, and especially when it comes to the basically all of us, I mean, that's what these systems are responsible for, and you think that somehow this is going to improve government by doing it in unorthodox ways and without oversight and the kinds of processes that have been developed through law, I think you don't really, in a serious way, believe government has a function or a purpose at all.
Quite possibly.
And that may be your opinion, but you haven't really lived much of a life without one. So buckle up. You know, this is going to be a rude awakening if we don't activate and be incredibly vocal. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to people you might disagree with about, you know, all manner of issues. But I would be willing to wager that most of us give a damn about how our personal identifiable information and how our payments and various services that we access, how that all works. Whether you benefit directly, it's in your backyard, and it will come home to roost if we do not get action from Congress.
Our email address here at Off the Hook is oth@2600.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts and feelings. Also, we're on social media in various places, on Blue Sky and Mastodon and Twitter. And you can find us on just by asking around, I guess, Off the Hook. But here's a couple of bits of feedback that we got in recent weeks. Tonight's episode, where we were talking about some of the threats that hadn't yet happened. Tonight's episode was fantastic, so good to hear this conversation and know it went out over the air. This might be the most important time ever for Off the Hook. Grateful for you all. Thank you very much for that sentiment. Here's another. I'm glad the listener wrote in challenging Off the Hook to go an episode without talking about politics, only because it gave you guys an opportunity to give the best response possible to such a ridiculous request. It's good to see people get it. You know, these things are relevant, they're important, and avoiding them, that's how we get into these messes. All right? This is relevant to every single one of you. It's not just for the people that are billionaires, not just for the people who get elected, not just for the people who follow politics all the time. This affects our lives. And when you see clowns going around like they've done over the last week without any kind of regard for our privacy, our security, or our future, you have to speak up. You have to take an interest. You have to have conversations. And maybe stick a bumper sticker or two up, or even graffiti. You know what? I don't care. Express yourself one way or another. It's more important than you could possibly know. We are out of time for the radio, but you know what? We're going to be on overtime. And you can get to overtime by going to YouTube.com and entering channel 2600, all one word. We will be starting at 8. We'll be taking phone calls. And, of course, we will be back here on WBAI next Wednesday at 7. Please, please support WBAI because, you know, no place else will you find a place that such ideas are able to be passed back and forth where free debate exists. Go ahead, Rob.
Also, now it's more important, I think, than it has been in a long time to get out there and communicate with people about everything that's going on. And one place you can do that is at a 2600 meeting. Check them out all over the world this Friday, 2600.com/meetings.
Remember, you're not alone. There are all kinds of struggles and fights going on and people that need our help. And let's not do what this song says. Good night.
If progress is our once more.